Today is Friday, April 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump continues his attack on the World Health Organization.
WHO's guidance had failed to control their borders at a very crucial phase, quickly unleashing the contagion around the world.
Plus, a game changer in Australia.
Very important tool in the toolbox. We're in a much better situation than we were in the 2009 pandemic.
And what do you know? Einstein was right. We'll have those stories and more next. As COVID-19 cases climb to over 2.1 million globally and more than 146,000 deaths, U.S. President Donald Trump is doubling down on his decision to suspend funding to the World Health Organization. He says it did not do enough to stop the coronavirus pandemic and was too lenient on China when the virus was first identified. White House correspondent Patsy Wiedekuswara starts us off.
President Donald Trump on Wednesday confirmed that his administration is suspending funding for the World Health Organization pending a review, again accusing the UN body of being China-centric. Trump attacked the WHO for objecting to his travel ban from China, which he implemented in late January and has often touted as a decisive step to contain the coronavirus.
WHO's guidance had failed to control their borders at a very crucial phase, quickly unleashing the contagion around the world. That was a horrible, tragic mistake, or perhaps they knew.
In the early stages of the pandemic, Trump praised China and the WHO, but shifted his tone and threatened to suspend funding early last week. The U.S. is the WHO's main donor, distributing over $550 million last year, almost 15% of all contributions. The second and third biggest donor is the Bill Gates Foundation and the Gavi Alliance, both owned by American philanthropist Bill Gates. In a tweet, Gates condemned Trump's decision, calling it dangerous. There are many critics of the WHO who say its response to the pandemic has fallen short. Several countries also disregarded the WHO's guidance and imposed travel restrictions on Chinese visitors early in the outbreak. But even some critics believe a review of the organization's performance should be done after the pandemic, not while the world is trying to get the outbreak under control, including former WHO legal counsel Gianluca Burci.
I think Trump is very wrong to do this now. To sort of close the tap for the fire brigade while the house is burning. Even if he has some arguments, it's not the time to do it.
On top of fighting COVID-19, the WHO must address polio, measles, malaria, Ebola, malnutrition, and many other diseases. The organization said it will work with partners to fill the financial gap of U.S. withdrawal. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus.
When we're divided, the virus exploits the cracks between us.
The WHO committed to review its performance to ensure transparency and accountability in due course. Robert Daly is the director of the Kissinger Institute on China and the United States at the Wilson Center.
My hope is that this pressure, which I think is probably warranted, will result in an investigation, but also in reform of the WHO to make sure that it is driven solely by the science of public health and not by the desires of leaders in China or anywhere else in the world.
With U.S. funding suspended, even WHO critics worry that Trump's move risks giving China an opportunity to expand its influence with the International Health Organization. Patsy Wiedekuswara, VOA News.
As part of his Thursday news conference, President Trump unveiled his roadmap for reopening the country. The AP's Sagar Magani has that part of the story.
President Trump is hailing new federal guidelines for eventually returning normalcy to America. The president says we're starting our life again.
We're starting rejuvenation of our economy again.
While he's focused on that, Dr. Anthony Fauci says his fellow health professionals have another focus.
The dominating drive of this was to make sure that this is done in the safest way possible.
Saying the phased approach is the right one, ensuring Americans can get out again while taking careful steps to avoid a further virus spread.
We're starting
our life again.
Though it's clear that will happen much slower than the president initially envisioned, the guidelines recommend states pass checkpoints during three phases, looking at new cases, testing, and surveillance data over 14 days before moving to the next phase. In phase one, churches, restaurants, and bars could reopen, but everybody has to keep their space.
Ensuring that we continue to do 6 feet maximum physical distancing in public spaces, continuing to avoid large gatherings.
White House Coronavirus Task Force Coordinator Deborah Birx says phase two has good news for parents.
Schools, daycares, and camps can reopen.
And then phase three.
Essentially returning to our new normal.
Which Birx says includes a lot of hand washing and, in general, keeping your distance. In states with low virus transmission,
they will be able to go literally tomorrow.
The president's entirely reversed course from earlier in the week and says he will defer to governors to make their own calls. Many say they will move at their own pace. Sagar Magani, Washington.
As the White House outlines what it sees as the path forward to reopen the country, in Europe, some countries have already begun that process, just as others are extending lockdowns. Earlier, I spoke with journalist Nicolas Pinault in Paris via WhatsApp to get the latest.
Well, you know, right now we have over 90,000 deaths on the continent. And as of yesterday, the WHO's European director, Hans Klug, he just mentioned that the storm clouds of this pandemic is still hanging heavily over the European region. So, for example, just as this Friday, you have more than 19,000 dead in Spain. Belgium just crossed 5,000 deaths. And, for example, France is right below 18,000 deaths. So you can tell that the burden is still heavily in Europe, but you still have some countries that are going to start to reopen slowly, just like Austria, or, for example, the major economy in Europe, Germany. School will restart beginning May 4th.
And this is all coming as U.S. President Donald Trump is criticizing the WHO for its handling of the coronavirus outbreak. What's been the reaction to that criticism in Europe?
Well, as soon as President Trump made that decision, the European Union on Wednesday said there's no reason to freeze WHO funding at this critical stage. And the European Union called for measure to promote unity instead of division. And Angela Merkel this week on a phone call with the G7 leaders emphasized that this pandemic can only be defeated with a strong and coordinated international response. And lately, and as of today, in the Financial Times, also the French President Emmanuel Macron criticized that decision.
Nicolas Pinault is a journalist based in France. Australia will start rapid coronavirus testing for more than 80 remote indigenous settlements. Phil Mercer reports that the 45-minute test will help authorities to monitor the spread of COVID-19 more efficiently in isolated areas where results currently take up to 10 days.
The rapid tests will allow Aboriginal health services in remote parts of Australia to respond quickly if COVID-19 is identified. Indigenous leaders believe any outbreak would be devastating for communities that already have complex health problems and a life expectancy of about 10 years less than the non-Aboriginal population. There are high rates of renal failure, diabetes, and smoking, while housing is often overcrowded in these communities. The government says Indigenous peoples are at elevated risk of the new coronavirus. Ministers say the 45-minute tests are a game-changing improvement, and Professor James Ward from the University of Queensland agrees.
Significant delays with COVID testing and diagnosis will result in major ramifications, including outbreaks for many of our communities. So it's a really very important tool in the toolbox. We're in a much better situation than we were in the 2009 pandemic, H1N1, where Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people were significantly overrepresented in hospitalisations, ICU admissions and death rates in that pandemic.
During an outbreak of H1N1 swine flu in 2009, Indigenous Australians made up a fifth of all hospital admissions and 13% of deaths. They comprise about 3% of the national population and suffer disproportionately high rates of poverty, ill health and imprisonment. Some remote Aboriginal settlements in Australia are banning outsiders, in an attempt to stop the march of COVID-19 across the country. The rapid COVID-19 tests are expected to begin within weeks. The technology is a result of collaboration between the Sydney-based Kirby Institute and Flinders University in South Australia. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
While scientists are conducting urgent studies to develop a COVID-19 vaccine, doctors and other healthcare workers are using every known method to try to sustain and heal the millions of individuals around the globe who are infected. In New York, a new grassroots group of coronavirus survivors called the Survivor Corps is mobilizing to help on both fronts. That includes a drive to arrange COVID-19 survivors to donate plasma to ill patients. Now, plasma is a byproduct of blood where antibodies that can fight the virus are formed. Now, to find out more, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Survivor Corps founder Diana Behrendt, a New Yorker who contracted and survived the virus earlier this year. She began by explaining the many ambitious ways her group is helping survivors help the world.
Survivor Corps is the largest growing grassroots movement in America, mobilizing survivors of COVID-19 to help find a cure. We can be part of the solution by donating our plasma, by volunteering for every medical, scientific, and academic study, because so many of the answers to this virus lie in the bodies of survivors.
How did you come to take this approach to start Survivor Corps?
When I first got my diagnosis, I was very early on in the curve, and Mount Sinai had just opened up the first convalescent plasma program in New York. And they were sending out email that was almost like chain mail looking for survivors. And as other programs started to come online, I realized that there needed to be a more efficient platform. So Survivor Corps acts as almost a one-stop shop for survivors to join and learn every way that they can participate.
You seem to have found a wonderful place for COVID-19 survivors to contribute in a really unique way.
Absolutely. When I got the virus, my body developed the antibodies to fight it off. And not everyone is that lucky. For example, for these plasma programs I donated last week, those antibodies can be extracted from my plasma and injected into those people who were either not able to develop their own antibodies, or what might be most useful down the line is using it prophylactically and giving it to frontline workers before they're exposed or immediately after they're exposed.
It must be so gratifying to be able to make some difference.
Is so empowering and gives hope to those who are home and sick and alone and scared right now. Not only will you most likely be okay, but you are going to save lives. Now, on the Survivor Corps Facebook group that I founded only 3 weeks ago, and we're now at almost 32,000 members, I see people every day through the illness counting down the days until they will be able to donate.
Being so proactive must be a real antidote to people who feel so passive in the face of this pandemic.
Right, because what we are being told is the best thing that you can do is do nothing. And there's a part of that that's true. Absolutely, stay home. But there are very few opportunities in a lifetime that you can save a single life. So the idea that you can go save 3 to 4 lives in a 32-minute painless blood donation where they separate out the plasma and give you your blood right back. I keep on being asked what the recovery period is, and I've laughed because there was none. I was given a bag of Oreos and some juice, and I felt like a superhero.
That was Diana Behrendt, the founder of Survivor Corp. She was speaking to our own VOA's Adam Phillips over Zoom video conferencing software from New York. And still to come,
using one of the world's largest telescopes, astronomers in Chile have found a star dancing at the heart of our Milky Way galaxy. And the course of that orbit helps to prove Albert Einstein right more than a century later.
You're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute. Acute respiratory distress syndrome, or ARDS, is said to be the leading cause of death in COVID-19 patients. A new study from Zhen Yan, a researcher at the University of Virginia School of Medicine, suggests regular exercise may prevent or at least reduce the severity of ARDS. To reach his findings, Yan reviewed research that he and others had conducted into a powerful antioxidant known as extracellular superoxide dismutase, or ECSOD. He says that the antioxidant hunts down harmful free radicals and protects our body's tissues, helping to prevent disease. Yan says while ECSOD is made naturally by our muscles, cardiovascular exercise enhances its production. Yan's review suggests someday gene therapy might be used to increase production of the antioxidant so that its presence is boosted in the lungs of COVID-19 patients. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Make a difference by honoring ordinary people doing extraordinary things to help one another. VOA encourages you to tell us about everyday people who have shown leadership in your communities during the coronavirus crisis. Submit your nominations to VOA Leaders at voanews.com. Send us your name, phone number, and email, and a VOA reporter will contact you. We're all in this together.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. U.S. President Donald Trump is threatening to adjourn Congress because lawmakers haven't approved his candidates for senior posts in his administration, including his nominee to run the independent agency that oversees the Voice of America. Now, International Edition's Lori London got some insight on the president's comments from VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman, who's been closely following the story.
There has been a nominee stuck in the Senate for quite a period of time to run what is now called the U.S. Agency for Global Media. And the U.S. AGM oversees the Voice of America and other non-military international broadcasters that are funded by the United States government. It is a bit remarkable that this has been brought up by the president. This is the latest and most direct salvo fired by the White House at the VOA. It began last week when Dan Scavino, the president's social media director, went after VOA on Twitter, and then a digital newsletter out of the White House called the 1600 Daily also accused the Voice of America of essentially parroting Chinese propaganda, pointing to a tweet that the VOA had put out running some Associated Press video of a countdown in Wuhan in China, which was the epicenter of the coronavirus epidemic originally. This countdown showing the city getting back on its feet. And not only people at VOA, but across the U.S. Mainstream media in general were very puzzled by these attacks. And now it appears what this was all about was perhaps putting pressure on the U.S. AGM and VOA management, because the VOA director, Amanda Bennett, who has been in this position during the entire Trump administration, was actually appointed by President Trump's predecessor, Barack Obama. And President Trump, as do most presidents, has basically over a period of time cleaned house and replaced the people running government agencies at the federal level with his own people.
I guess it's common for a new administration to come in and want their own people, and that's part of it. But it certainly would seem that President Trump prefers media outlets that have positive comments about his performance. And when they do not, he seems to get very upset about it.
Yes, the president has frequently attacked commercial media. Most significantly, the Washington Post, New York Times, CNN, MSNBC, CBS, and even Fox News at times, because their reporters have either asked pointed questions to the president that he didn't like, or run with news items that also were not as laudatory as the president would like to have. The VOA, however, although it's 100% funded by the federal government, it is an independent agency, and there has been in place since the presidency of Gerald Ford a charter and a firewall in place that prevents any administration from overtly telling VOA what to broadcast or what not to broadcast. And since the beginning of VOA in 1942, that has been a source of VOA's credibility, that VOA reports factually, tells it like it is. And Amanda Bennett, in the defense of the agency, has pointed this out in her statements, saying that judging from the way our audiences are surging to us, seeking information they can rely on in this coronavirus crisis, the world believes in our mission. It's hard work and it's important work, perhaps more than ever before.
Steve Herman is VOA's White House bureau chief. He was speaking to our own Lori London. Before the onset of the coronavirus, Iraq was in the throes of its largest social and political movement in modern history, with sit-in protests and upheaval across the country. As the virus spreads, the problems protesters were fighting to solve have become even more glaring. The protesters have now almost all left the streets, but they say that this is a pause, not an end, to the uprising. VOA's Heather Murdoch has this report.
We first met Ali Mikdam in January in Tahrir Square in Baghdad. He was living in a tent in protest against his government, along with tens of thousands of others. In March, Iraq began locking down cities because of the coronavirus, and protest camps across the country mostly disbanded. The streets of Baghdad are quiet, and Ali Mikdam goes out only once a week for groceries. He says the uprising is far from over, though. He says the pandemic may have reduced the pressure on the government temporarily, but that as soon as the pandemic is over, protesters will be prepared to demonstrate and to fight if they have to. Hundreds of people died in mass demonstrations that began last October, and tens of thousands were injured. Activists said they were fighting against corruption, poverty, and for basic government services. As of Friday, the Iraqi government has counted 1,434 COVID-19 patients and 80 deaths. However, protesters say the coronavirus may not be as dangerous as Iraq's increasingly strong militias, some of which have targeted demonstrations. Ali Mikdam is now in hiding after receiving death threats. After 17 years of war, Iraq is already impoverished, and the coronavirus lockdown is threatening economic ruin. Medical workers, however, say the country's healthcare system cannot handle a widespread outbreak, so lockdown is the only option. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Istanbul.
Astronomers in Chile have discovered a star that's been dancing around a black hole in the Milky Way galaxy, just as Albert Einstein may have predicted more than a century ago. Reuters reporter Gloria So has more.
The European Southern Observatory, or ESO, announced the find on Thursday. They think the star may be orbiting a supermassive black hole called Sagittarius A star, hypothesized to be the well in time and space that sits in the middle of the galaxy. According to Einstein's theory of relativity in 1915, the dancing star orbiting the black hole would perform a twirl as it gets close. That's what Thursday's announcement points to, and it's just the latest discovery that backs up Einstein. And as Alejandro Jimenez from the Max Planck Institute explains, it also gives evidence that the immense Sagittarius A star exists.
¿Por qué es tan importante este descubrimiento?
There is a lot of evidence that massive black holes exist, but to say that they exist, we had to demonstrate two things. That this said object is massive, but at the same time compact, and that the general theory of relativity formulated by Albert Einstein correctly describes what happens naturally.
ESO scientists said nearly 30 years of measurements allowed them to follow the star's rosette-shaped orbit around Sagittarius A star. That's a point for Einstein and not his predecessor, Isaac Newton, who believed the star would travel in an ellipse-like pattern. Having already found evidence for relativity, scientists' next step is to look at stars closer to Sagittarius A star to see how being so close to it warps their path through the cosmos.
That was Reuters' Gloria So. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening and spending part of your day with us. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser on your phone, tablet, or other mobile device, as well as your desktop computer, to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great weekend.